listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Or CFRO Co-op Radio Vancouver. We're here today with Valerie Shepherd, and Valerie is a catastrophic stroke survivor, inspirational keynote speaker, university lecturer, executive leadership coach, founding member of the Evolutionary Business Council, and her number one selling book is Living Happy to Be Me, or it's dancing your soul lifestyle. That sounds pretty interesting. I like that. So what does it mean to live happy to be me?
Hey there. How are you, Michael? I'm so excited to be on your show today. Thank you very much, and a shout out to your audience. Hello, everyone. So the book, Living Happy to Be Me, Dancing Your Soul Lifestyle, is all about creating an inner place of peace, love, joy, and freedom so you can create that in the world around you. Each word was specifically chosen. Living, in the title, is about creating a lifestyle. This is not a book that you read once and you get a few tips and you're done. It really is kind of, if I put these principles into action in my life 24/7, 365, I get a really magnificent result. And happy is really about a deep sense of inner happiness, unconditional happiness. It doesn't come from the next, you know, shiny object or great relationship or a great job or salary raise or really nice dinner. For me, it used to be $100 bottles of champagne. It's not from those things. Those things are great and they're still flowing into my life. But that's not the kind of happiness that this book teaches about. And then to be me, the capital M-E in the title stands for magnificent essence. And it's about our spiritual center, not our personality, not our identities. It's not that made up stuff about us that we have to make our way in the world. It's really something deeper and purer and more magnificent.
Wow. That's just your explanation of that sounds profound already. It sounds like through the book you're going to go on a soul search of you.
Yeah.
Or of me, yeah. I should say.
Yes.
Yes.
You do that. It is an inner journey, and it's really for people who are ready, who see themselves as responsible for their lives, see themselves as the master and commander, mistress and commander. They're the ones who are doing it, creating it, breathing life into it. And they're also willing to take responsibility if it's not everything that they want it to be, and not blame it on conditions in the world and the economy and the boss and the workers and the family and whatever else could be, you know, could appear to be the source of problem, and really take responsibility and say, okay, if there are problems in my life, I'm going to be the one who resolves them. And I'm going to do that by getting very clear on how I'm living this life and what I'm bringing to it, and maybe hanging on to for way too long.
Wow. So there's a lot of questions I have around which you have written and what inspired what you've written. But I'm going to start in the table of contents here, and we're going to start with the teachings. And you have under teachings things that say shed your mask, and then you have four steps. And those steps are wake up, shake up, make up, and take up. Now, let's start with shed your mask. What do we mean by shed your mask?
Well, I believe, and in my experience, first of all, it's helpful for people to know that where the book came from. And it's from my own journey of personal transformation. So everything in here, in the teaching section, is stuff that I have explored and experienced myself, and that it's based on that exploration that I did. And so shedding the masks is a discussion of the ways that I, and now that I'm coaching and consulting, the ways that lots of other people, as I've talked to them in my practice, lots of other people are going through life wearing a separate person, a persona that they put on for circumstances in their lives. So they have a happy mask for when they're not really feeling happy, but they don't want to tell anyone about it, or they think no one really wants to hear about it. They have everything's calm, cool, and collected, you know, I'm okay mask for when they're in certain circumstances when they don't think it would be acceptable to be less than calm, cool, and collected, mostly for people that's around their kids, or it's at work, or it's with people who are kind of acquaintances, not necessarily good friends. They have all these different masks for different circumstances. And so what ends up happening is people are living a totally disintegrated life. There are different pieces of them, not all of them in any one circumstance, different versions of them being expressed in their life. And the only thing you can create when you're when you're totally disintegrated like that is a fragmented, unfulfilling, unhappy life. People don't understand that, but that's what I'm here to teach them.
Wow. So all those things that society says that should make us happy really aren't making us happy.
Not deep and lasting happiness. I believe those things, and I get a lot of kind of conditional momentary happiness. I talk to so many clients who say, I thought I was going to be so happy after I achieved this next thing, got my next raise, graduated from college, the kids left the house, and I got on with retirement. I mean, people go through the list, young, old, really old. It doesn't matter. We all have the list of things we, quote unquote, chased after, believing that once I get there, I'll take a big, deep exhale and everything will be great. And it's not. And it's not that we shouldn't want those things. I think they are part of the divine, beautiful design of this earthly realm.
Okay.
But what I say in the book is that there's a longing inside us to go deeper than that. And if we really want to be truly happy, we have to get... It has to be a both and equation. Yes, I'll have my... speaking at a church the other day, and I said, for me, it was one of my best things was $100 bottle of champagne and some oysters on the half shell. I still have my $100 bottle of champagne and oysters on the half shell. I just don't expect it to bring me the deep and lasting happiness that I still want, even after having that bit of happiness. I want the bigger, the better, the more true, the more powerful, the more all-encompassing version of happiness, along with these little pieces of excitement and pleasure along the way. And I think part of the problem is we've labeled those things as the keys to happiness, and they're not. They're the keys to, like I said, conditional happiness. When I have this stuff, I feel really good. And when I don't, I'm looking for that stuff. And what I'm saying is, instead of being a looking for the next that stuff, if you anchor in this happiness, whether you have that stuff or not, this happiness still exists.
That makes total sense. Because there's a good number of the people listening to this show that they have a disability because of an accident or an event. Let's go to an event. I think that's probably better wording. And if that event took away, in my particular instance, an event took away my ability to rock climb, and it was something that made me happy, I had to figure out what happy was all over again because something was taken away from me. So what you're, if I'm hearing this right, so what you're saying is if I find that deep set happiness inside of me, it doesn't matter what else was taken away by an event, I still have the deep thread of happiness.
Right. And I understand the event situation, and how that can radically, in some cases, change what it is that we can experience on the physical level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether that I've had events that were really like career-ending knee injuries when I was playing soccer and running track. It was like, okay, that's over. Yeah. And recently I had a catastrophic stroke. So I'm still dealing with the physiological ramifications thereof. So the whole right side of my body is still going through the recovery. Or, you know, is it finished and this is the way I'll be for the rest of my life? It's not clear yet, but there's still a lot going on the right side. The stroke happened about a year ago, 14 months ago. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're exactly right. Our physiological abilities can change. But when we're in this relationship with this deeper part of ourselves and this more true and lasting form of happiness, then I can experience myself as this physical body and its abilities or lacks thereof and still be happy. And people ask me, so hasn't it been hard, like, going through this? And I'm like, well, I separate into two pieces. There's the being who I really am through a stroke and stroke recovery. And then there's the things I have to do as a result of the stroke and as a part of the stroke recovery. On the have to do side, it's not that easy in some cases. The physical therapy to learn to walk again and to be able to use my right arm and stuff like that is still hard. It's hard. It takes a lot of energy. But the stuff on this side of being Valerie Renee Shepherd in the midst, who is now a stroke survivor, that's pretty easy.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's pretty easy.
That makes sense. So I totally understand the mask now, because we all do it. It's like, no one wants to hear it. We say things like, no one wants to hear his gripe. And that's a mask. So
yeah, it is. Yeah. When in fact, what I've found is maybe every single person who asks you how you are doesn't really want to know. But if you really use your intuitive abilities, you know when you're in a safe environment and when there are people who really are vested and interested in how you're doing at a true level. And what I've also found is the more real I am, the more real they get to be back. And so it's like an invitation. If I be that, they have an opportunity to be that back. And then when they're that and I'm that with them, then it creates this ripple effect. And I believe that ripple effect can change the planet. When there are enough people who are willing to be the truth, who mm-hmm. are willing to be real, and they call other people into the truth and into being real, then imagine that world where when you say, how are you? And somebody says, not so good. you don't just keep on going. You stop and say, tell me about it. And what I've found is when people tell me about it, I can relate. There are very few experiences in my time as a coach and consultant that are so unique. I've never heard them before.
Right.
And in the classes that I teach, and I love group coaching for this reason, people hear your story and I'll say, anybody else relate to that? And it can be about incest. It can be about being a sexual addict. It can be about being a drug addict. It can be about having parents abandon them at a certain, it can be about any kind of horror you can imagine. And I'll say, can anybody relate to this question? And you'd be amazed. I've never had a story told in a group coaching session where nobody else raised their hand. So we think we're the only ones suffering through, and we think that if we tell, that'll be our greatest shame. And in fact, everywhere I go, it's the same stuff. Oneness goes very deep. Oneness goes very deep. And there's a universal experience in this human realm. And there are very few that are not experienced by lots of people. They're slightly different, but people can relate to your, whatever you want to call it. I don't like using the word pain, but yeah, they can relate to that.
Yeah. So explain briefly your four steps.
Okay. So the way the four steps came into play was I, a few years ago, hit this place where I knew that my life was not working the way I thought my life should work. I was in the hospital fearing that I was having a heart attack. And I wasn't having a heart attack, but there was something going on with my heart that I was later diagnosed by cardiologists with a benign superarrhythmia, which basically means there's something going on with your heart, the electromagnetic pulse of your heart, that could kill you. But there's no physiological cause. That was what the benign meant. We can't fix it because there's nothing fixable on the physiological level. And so that sent me on a spiritual journey, a deeper spiritual journey than the rest of my life had been. And through that, these four steps were created. I went through lots of classes and workshops and books and spiritual teachers and advisors, and I kind of started noticing kind of these patterns of what was working for me and what gave me the greatest kind of spiral up or advancement in being a better version of myself. And I distilled those into these four steps. So the first one is wake up to the truth of who you are and be that, no matter what else is going on around you, that you are not just human. You are an integrated spiritual human being and a divine being, a fragment of the divine image and likeness, essence manifesting in this realm at all times. Be that and your life changes. Shake up is step two, and it means shake up and release all the things that you think are so true about you that don't align with step number one. So if I'm a divine being, I don't have time for this concept called lack. Lack of time, lack of money, lack of love. That doesn't fit with the real truth of the universe. So where did those stories I'm telling myself come from? And how do I release them and be different?
On Labor Day weekend, September 2nd to the 4th, it's the Bumbershoot Festival 2016 in Seattle, Washington. The festival's got a little something for everyone, with music, comedy, arts, culture, and food. Featuring Chastity Belt, So Pitted, Dude York, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Death Cab for Cutie, and more. Passes are on sale now, so head on over to Bumbershoot.com.
Join us
for the launch of Art Talking Women on Friday, June 10th at 7:30 at Vivo Media Arts Center. Vivo and Instant Evolution bring you a series of intimate interviews based on the artistic process and thoughts on community plus technology. Art Talking Women showcases Canadian female artists to the world. The 13-episode series airs every Friday at noon on Vimeo, iTunes, Vivo's website, as well as Instant Evolution's website.
All right, I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay. Wait, hold on. Does it make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we. You're not even gonna last. All right. Victoria's Pretty Good, Not Bad Festival, Fountain, just back from France. Montreal? What the f***?
It's a script.
I couldn't even... What? Victoria's Pretty Good, Not Bad Festival. Fountain, okay, just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a f***ing elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR Production Department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
Second, there will be free lessons, shows, and social dancing from 7:30 to 11:30 p.m. every Friday under the domes at Robson Square. Everyone is welcome. No partner experience is required. There will be lessons for beginners and shows put on by dance professionals and local dance schools. For more information, visit their website
at dancesports.com.
We'll try to find something.
And step three is makeup, and that's make up a new story of you and your life. Like, who do I want to be now that I know who I am? What in my life doesn't fit? What's going to change? What is it that helps me be that in a way that is my magnificence getting reflected back to me from the world? And then the fourth step is take up the reins and go live it. What are the practices? Who are the people? What are the things I should be doing that keep it going so that it becomes this, I call it a light style, not a lifestyle, because I really believe that as you apply the four steps, you release the anchors that weigh you down, the old resentments, the pain, the shame, the guilt, anything from the past that is anchoring you in a not so great place. Your whole energy spirals into a higher vibration and you attract what you want and you're being that. And so how do I keep this light style for not just, oh, while I'm reading the book and then I just start doing life that way I always did, but how do I keep this going 24/7, 365 for the rest of my days on the planet?
Wow. That's really... I've never heard all this explained quite the way that you're explaining it. You're saying some of the same things that other coaches has said, but in a very different way. It's like it really resonates with people. It's just amazing. You know, because we always tell these stories about, oh, well, I'm no good because I can't do this anymore. Or that
all of us were imprinted or flat out taught some things about the world that aren't really true. I mean, we're conditioned to believe that our worth is measured on either our stuff, the stuff that we amass, the amount of money we make, or what we can physically, mentally do. If we have a quote-unquote a right mind or a perfect mind, if we have a great body that allows us to do X, Y, and Z, then supposedly our value is greater than someone else's. And that's not true. And somehow we take on those beliefs. And I don't think people even sit us down and tell us, you know, if you do this or don't do this, if you have this or don't have that, then you're less than or more than. I believe that we just soak up our environment. We, especially as little kids, we learn from what we experience, not just from what we're quote unquote taught.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. That little kid, as little kids, we're like these sponges that just soak up everything around us, and we take on these things that, like you said, may not necessarily be true. So, did.
Right.
How do we know when we found our true essence?
To me, it's unmistakable. It gets much easier to get clear on it when you clear out the stuff that's covering it. So I believe it's always there, like a light, right? If you turn off the light switch, the light goes out, but the electricity is still coming to the lamp. So right. your essence is always available to you. But like Michelangelo would say, there's a beautiful sculpture inside this seemingly ugly or inconsequential rock. And all I'm doing is chipping away at the stuff that isn't supposed to be there so that the magnificence of the sculpture can come through, can shine through and be experienced. Mm-hmm. So your essence is there. It may be hard for you to feel it when you're telling yourself all these stories and wearing all these masks, but it's still there. And as you get rid of those things, you'll start to feel this level of peace inside you. So in the book on pages 132 and 133, I talk about the things that are the unmistakable. What does it mean to claim I'm living happy to be me? And here are some unmistakable things. I'm recognizing myself as a divine being, consciously acting in accordance with universal laws. I am actively engaged in knowing myself deeply, accepting everything about myself, and loving myself unconditionally. I've changed my story about who I am and how the world works. I am feeling oneness and acknowledging and honoring the divinity in myself, as well as all beings and things, even when they don't. I am free from the past and the future, living more presently, anchored in the now moments. I feel lighter inside. I move through life with effortless effort. And here's one of my favorites. I laugh easily and smile often. And there's two pages of them where I kind of help people, you know, are you feeling it? Like, and not feeling it for a second, but like more and more of your day is comprised of this, these things. I feel comfortable in my skin, and just being real, just being myself, is easy and fulfilling. I'm filled with gratitude and a profound sense of belonging. So I know I belong in this world. I know I have something to contribute. And I'm grateful for my life exactly as it is, even when it's way less than perfect.
Yeah, there's something. Whose life is perfect, right? So at this point, I'm going to thank all of our listeners that are listening to our half-hour version of the show, and we're going to come right back with you, Valerie, for those who are listening to the hour show. Okay?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here,
Everybody dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
God, this is awful.
When I climbed up the mountain, my climb back down again for you. I climb the mountains again for you, and then I climb back down. Climb back.
Anything.
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at CITR.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance?
Come right back with you, Valerie, for those who are listening to the hour show. Okay?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and welcome back if you're listening to our full hour show. And we're still here with Valerie Shepherd, and we're talking about her book. Living Happy to Be Me. And we're going to stress that the me is actually capital M and capital E, which stands for, what's that again, Valerie?
Magnificent Essence.
Yes. So, in your bio, in how I introduced you, you were talking about being a survivor of a catastrophic stroke. What exactly does that mean?
That means, catastrophic means significant. So some people talk about TIAs, mm-hmm. and other forms of stroke that can be transient and that can also be have minimal long-term debilitating physiological effect. Catastrophic stroke is huge in terms of the impact on the physical body. This particular stroke was a catastrophic hemorrhagic stroke, meaning I had a blood vessel burst in my brain, and this kind of stroke is less than 20. I've heard lots of different numbers, but so I think it's less than 20. I sometimes hear less than 10, but I think it's less than 20% of all strokes. And most people who have this kind of stroke die. And so I didn't. I'm still here. I chose to hang out here.
Well, God had a bigger purpose for you, huh? We can go that way. Yeah.
And I'm really committed to fulfilling my purpose.
Yeah. So did you write this book before or after the stroke?
Before.
Before.
So... Yeah, this book is not a product of the stroke. This book was scheduled to launch in 2015, about 3 months after the stroke happened. I didn't change a single solitary word in this book because of the stroke. What the stroke has given me an opportunity to do is to put into practice at a much deeper level, to embody at a deeper level what I was already doing through the four steps and the way the book was born. So it's been really amazing to be able to talk about the impact of the four steps now. You know, it's like when I talk about the impact on my life and how I'm doing with embodying the four steps as a stroke survivor, learning to walk and all that, it seems to touch people at a very deep level. And it seems to they can connect to stroke. There are a lot of people who've been touched by stroke. I didn't know that. Yeah. That, you know, and it's getting younger and younger. I've had 20-year-olds tell me about their strokes. I've had 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds. When you get up into the 50s, then they tell me about their strokes and their parents and their siblings and mm-hmm. grandparents and all of that. So I thought it would be, you know, everybody's been touched by cancer, but it seems to me stroke is a universal, maybe less known on the big scale of things, but when you talk individually with people, they have some pretty visceral relationship with the idea of stroke and with actually the ramifications of a stroke. And So it's allowed me to connect with people at that level and to share how the teachings can support you through something as scary and debilitating and like debilitating forever potentially as a stroke.
Yeah. I kind of get a grasp of what it means not to be able to move your body in ways because the nerve or whatever just won't do what you're telling it to do. And mine's is the lighter hearted of all those sort of things. I've had Bell palsy 5 times, which means that half of your face just decides, I don't want to work. and it's lighthearted because, okay, it just means that you got to find a different way of eating or something like that. Or at worst case, I knew somebody that had it that they had to have their one eye taped shut and because their eye started drying out. But in comparison to, you said it's your whole right side of your body. And, okay, folks, I am actually talking to her on Skype right now. And for the most part, I'm gonna say this, Valerie, that I can't see evidence of the stroke except for when you use your hands to talk. I noticed that you only use your left hand to talk. And you said that the stroke affected the right side of your body. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, my brother, when I was in the hospital, my brother flew out to California from Virginia. The doctor said to my mom, whoever needs to get him here within 24 hours because we don't know that she'll last much longer than that.
Right.
And so my brother was here the next day. How he did that, I don't know, but he was here on that. The stroke happened when I was facilitating a workshop on a Friday, and by Saturday afternoon, he was in that hospital room. And he said, I was in a coma, so I don't know. But he said he thought he could see something on my face. But for the most part, you can't tell. I can feel it. Like my face, my right side, it feels like when you get a Novocaine shot and it starts to wear off. So it's that tingly, it feels kind of puffy. Sometimes I feel my face, my eye sometimes weeps. I can feel it in my teeth. I can feel it in my scalp. My right side is very tingly, right on my right toes. They kind of do strange things. The bottom of my foot is a little bit numb. So there's definitely still stuff that we're dealing with on the right side with the nerves and the muscles. I've gotten a lot of strength back and a lot of coordination. And there's still some activity going on to get even more back.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio.
Let's see here.
Everybody dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh, everybody. God, this is awful.
When I climb up the mountain, climb back down again for you. I fall the mountain again for you, and then I climb back down.
Isn't there anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at CITR.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance.
He's a nasty, nasty guy. He's a liar.
Get him out of here. Get him the hell out of here. Get him out of here.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
They call me
DJ Ray.
The late night show is the start of the weekend. Tune in every Saturday mornings from 12:30 a.m. till late, right after the medicine show. Email us, CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
This concludes our proposal. Thank you for your attention.
Tune in every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. for A Little Bit of Soul with your host, Jade Dog. A Little Bit of Soul plays primarily old recordings of jazz, swing, big band, blues, oldies, and Motown.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate, remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What does Pilate? He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Virginia.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Off to do a lecture. So, yes, at one of the colleges in California, right?
Yes, I teach at the University of California, Irvine. And I teach a class based on my book. I teach two classes, one called Living 101, Being Happy and Whole, and the other one, Living 102. And 102 is new. We're just starting that in the fall. It's so that we can take students to continue them to a higher spiral and help them really embody the principles. And I love teaching. It's getting rave reviews. It's, to me, it's like having a group coaching class. And it's really helping. You know, the whole point was, why should somebody have to wait? When I decided, wow, I think what I've learned, I could somehow distill it into these things that actually feel universal and could apply to just about anybody. And when I did that, I started hearing from people saying, will you come teach this in our community? And I started hearing how much pressure and anxiety and depression and suicide is a part of the lives in this age group between like 16 and 25. Like in college, suicide is the number two cause of death. When when you factor in how many kids are like self-medicating as a way of escaping from the aspects of their life that they don't want, and then they get in a car accident's the number one, and how many of those car accidents are because of this other behavior that's also somewhat triggered by debilitating negative emotions about themselves that they're not able to manage, it might be the number one cause of death. And so for me, I was like, you know, why wait till you're in your 40s or 50s when I was doing the journey to like master your life? Why not? Why are we not fortifying our generations of young people with a divine way, a spiritual way to help have a better life from the beginning as a foundational piece that you grow with through your life, as opposed to you hit a place in your life where you're like, what the? Why is my life my life? It's not what I thought I was going to be living. And then you're redoing it, trying to unlearn old habits. And so I was very fortunate to present the concept to a really awesome vice chancellor at the University of California, Irvine. And he was like, I'm totally with you. Let's go. Let's do it. And within a couple months of having just shared it with him and written the proposal, I was in the classroom, and I love teaching this class, and this, according to their testimonials, the students' lives are magnificently changed, and now it's all about how do I get it bigger? How do I expand this? Now it's all about the expansion plan. So adding the 102 class was the first part of it, and now it's how do we get into more universities and hearts and minds, and we're planning a major event for 2017 and start having it as a destination thing that young people can come to from wherever they are and start down the path of living happy to be me.
Wow. So, what's the ultimate goal for Valerie?
Well, I said a minute ago, the ultimate goal for me is to express exactly who and what I am and to fulfill my divine purpose on the planet. And for me, to get really a little more specific on that, I know that I'm here to be a messenger. I know that my purpose is to carry wisdom and to share it. And wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom is knowledge put into action. So I'm committed to embodying the principles that I teach so that my life can be a demonstration of how the principles actually play out in one's life, how easy it can be to live at the highest vibration and bring into your life the things that you really want. And that's me. When I leave the planet, I don't want to leave grasping the sheets and, you know, wishing I had a few more days to get it right. I want to leave with a big smile on my face and a mighty exhale that says, yep, that was a cool ride.
That, I have to say, that would be one of my goals, is to leave with a smile on my face saying that was a cool ride. Yes. how do we get the book?
Oh boy, that's so easy. it's available on Amazon. It should be in Barnes and Noble. I've shortened the Amazon URL to tinyurl.com/living HTB, living HTBM. So that's the acronym that stands for happy to be me. So it's tinyurl.com/living HTBM. And that takes you to the Amazon book page, where you can buy the book, for one for you, one for your best friend, one for your daughter and son. You can buy for as many people as you like. And there are some reviews there. And the book has gotten a review from Jack Canfield and from Marcy Shimoff and Janet Atwood, some other kind of big heavy hitters in the spiritual transformation space. And then there are also some reviews from, you know, John and Jane Q. Reader, just like you or I, who bought the book and have been reading it and applying it in their lives and what they think about it.
Yeah. Awesome. So everybody, I'm going to say this right on air here, that go out and buy the book. I've started reading it. I haven't finished reading it yet. I was hoping to have it finished reading before I got to the interview, but it's just so much there to comprehend. And it's not one of those things you read it through. You want to read it. Okay, I got to this step. Now I want to put it into action, put it into my life. It's one of those kind of books. And it isn't your standard self-help book either. It's like you really feel compelled to, okay, I'm going to stop and I'm going to try this step. I'm going to try exactly what she says and see how it applies into my life. I hope that you change millions and millions of lives with the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. I say yes, yes, yes to that as a prayer. And oh boy, would I be dancing in delight. It doesn't take a million for me to be delighted. I'm delighted with one, you know, when one student gets teary-eyed and tells me how the book is helping them deal with the stuff that they didn't think they were going to be able to deal with. That's pretty powerful. Yeah. So just one. I'll just take one. And that's amazing. And a million would just be incredible. Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Valerie. And you really are living your purpose, and you're quite the messenger. So,
thank you.
All right. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah. Many blessings to your audience. And thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming. So that was an interview with Valerie Shepherd, author of the book. What's the name of the book again? Oh, God, you ever draw one? It's Living Happy to Be Me. Valerie Shepherd wrote that book. And I am trying to put each one of those steps into my own life, and I advise others to do the same. After the interview, of course, we were on a Skype call, and she actually welled up for another five minutes or so after the interview, when I actually turned off all the recording equipment and everything, and we talked for another few minutes, and she welled up, and it was a really touching thing. I never had that happen to me, that I say something during an interview that didn't really touch someone's heart. And I know a lot of people that do a lot of heartwarming things, but I think Valerie's, she's really working just from the heart and from the place that she wants to help people. So it was pretty amazing. So I'm going to play a clip from you from, it's Cheryl Young. It was from the Just One More Step Walk. It was day 25. We had a morning meeting, and she always gave a little bit about what was going on and what we would hope to accomplish for the day. And then an inspirational quote afterwards. So here you go.
Golden. And then I should say good morning. I hope you all got heat.
Yeah.
Oh. Last time our rig gets heat until we get to Golden.
No, you love it.
Oh, okay. You all look all wide awake and bushy-tailed, and that's a lie because you all look like you're sound asleep. Okay. What our plan today is, we're going to... Mary Lou wants to walk first thing this morning, so we'll do what we have been doing. We'll go 7 clicks down the road. 7 clicks. There's a big pull-out, or a pull-out. Put the rigs there. And then, James will bring Mary Lou back to us. Okay. Today we have to kind of keep close together because we have to go through the national parks together to get us in. This is a $411 thing that we paid for, so we can get in there. So we got to be together. And then Rick made a mistake. That's why I've been working with Nigel. He has us at Mount St. Donald Campground, or the Alyssa, Campground in Glacier National Park. He put us there last night. Well, we're not there yet. So the dates are wrong. So Nigel will take them in when we get to the parks this morning, probably this morning. Come on in, love. And change that date so that we're actually going to be staying at, because I know Mount St. Donald is closed because right now they're working on machinery there, so they won't let us in. So we'll probably be staying at that one. Right, Nigel?
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't know how to pronounce it, but we're staying there. It's a native
Indian.
Oh, my
God. Okay. Illisilawat.
Yeah, so that's where we're going to be looking. Now, we'll stay there and find out what we get when we get there. Okay, but it's free. So that's always good. Free.
And what's the name of it? That one?
Yeah. So, today is not a challenging day. It's an easy day for all of you. We've got a lot of narrow bridges, narrow walkways. We've got the tunnels. We've got construction. So we're going to walk when we can. I'm still not able to walk, so I know that Mary Lou's going to walk first for one or two clicks. We'll get her back to the rigs, which are going to be 7 clicks down the road.
I can just stay in here if Michael's going out.
Michael will go out after you. And then Alan has told me that he would like to walk a little later. So we'll take our turns. Alan out after we all meet up again. So today, I believe it's 28 clicks. We're at the Glacial National Park, and I believe that's where we meet up with them. And then just pull over, let Nigel walk in and talk to them all and sort this mess out. And so we know where we're staying tonight. All good. It's wonderful. Mary's coming in today. Yeah, that'd be awesome. She's bringing pulled pork in, so we don't really have to make our own meals tonight. It will be done, and we had all forgotten that. I remembered that last night, but I figure I'll tell you guys this morning. It's pulled pork, so then we'll have the stir fry the next day.
Okay.
All good? Mm-hmm. Okay, any comments? I hear there's more giggling going on. I like to hear that.
Who said that?
You just say that.
Oh, I did say
so
that.
I like that. More of that is good, but what I really want you all to do, we are in the National Forest. We are in BC, a beautiful province, and enjoy what we're in. Enjoy the campsites, enjoy the wildlife. Actually, they gave us a note here that...
no bears last night.
I know. Participants may encounter wild animals along the highway, including grizzly and black bears, moose, coyotes, and mountain goats. Do not approach and do not feed.
So keep well away from James.
I'm going bear hunting. I'm sorry, that's it.
Okay.
I don't
want to cut. As long as you have your light and shining armor, or purple shirt, light and shining.
There's a baby chipmunk I was talking to this morning.
Alvin? We're considered a special event permit. This is what we're doing, and we have everything covered. It must include a support vehicle or vehicles with flashing lights, with at least one vehicle traveling immediately behind the participant. We're everything online there. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
We're taking our rigs up to 7K.
Okay.
Then we're all meeting there. And
yes,
then we're going to 28.
We'll go after that. But James will bring you
back.
Yeah,
I know that part. I'm just wondering about the next part where we meet at the mart. Am I ahead of you?
When we get to 7K, we'll all get to 7K and discuss it.
Yeah, because we can't be apart too long.
Because we've got tunnels and...
Yeah.
Stuff to do today.
I want you guys to be safe. And so
there's no walking through the tunnels.
No, absolutely not.
So there's going to be a lot of driving.
Yes. We're in the, So it's an easy day. We just got to sort this out so we're staying at the right place tonight. We don't want to screw up, because he's already screwed up. But Rick's given us his cell number, so we can always call him when we get to the park guy, and then they can talk and sort it all out, because he screwed up. He knew we were going to be here tonight, so it's okay, it's all good. So that's kind of your day. There's not even places with bathrooms except at Bostock, and it's an outhouse on the left side. So the rigs are it, guys. The rigs are it. So this is our good days. We're up in the wilderness. Watch the big rigs, some of them are unprofessional and rude. So, you know, we can always
That's putting it mildly.
We're on a different channel today.
You don't want our men to get upset with everybody.
So. We're on a different channel. I'll be jumping back and forth, so if you don't hear it. But I'd rather keep you guys off that channel so you guys don't
get it. Yeah, so now
thank you.
That's all right. I have a positive quote.
Okay. Now, it's a little different cult today. You know, I like to throw things at you. Our attitudes create our lives. When you look at the world in a narrow way, how narrow it seems. When you look at it in a mean way, how mean it is. When you look at it selfishly, how selfish it is. But when you look at it in a broad, generous, friendly spirit, what wonderful people you find in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are all wonderful. I just want to share that with you this morning.
I agree.
Now, there you go. Awesome meeting. I think we're done, unless Nigel has to say anything.
I see Michelle.
And then, I should say good morning.